Welcome to the Movies on the Brain podcast, hosted by Brian C. Wood and Chad Metz.
Hold on, let me get one more at it.
Welcome. Welcome to the Movies on the Brain podcast, hosted by Brian C. Wood and Chad Metz.
I might do a couple. I'll send, you know what, I'm going to do that. I'm going to send you a few voices, and you decide which one's best. I got a couple other voices that might fit better, but all right, let's go ahead and start. We can just put this
all
in.
All right. Welcome to the Movies on the Brain podcast. I'm one of your hosts, Brian C. Wood, and with me tonight is my co-host, as always,
Chad Metz.
And from the land down under, Mr. T-Bob Abab.
Am I? I'm Australian now.
Yeah. Well, you know. Either way, I mean, I saw Crocodile Dundee last night.
Okay. So you've got Australia on the mind. I have no idea either, Chad.
No.
But hey, thank you, man. I'm glad to be back. Glad to talk some movies. I've got them on the brain.
Yeah, as we do often. So let's start off this afternoon, this evening, this morning with talk about James Cameron.
Oh, okay.
There's this mythical movie. They call it Avatar. We've heard about sequels being filmed to Avatar for many, many years now. And now it looks like we've got an official start of production release. Chad, what is our stated position on the Avatar sequels?
Until I see the movie doesn't exist.
Well, this week we got our first production release, start of production announcement, and we got the price tag for the Avatar sequels.
This is pretty wild.
$1 billion. $1 billion for four movies.
Wow. Well, okay, now, let me jump in right here then, because y'all know the pricing of movies better than, I think, me and most people. So, is $250 million per movie, though, really that crazy of a budget when you're talking about a movie with James Cameron behind it and the Avatar kind of world attached?
Dawn of Justice was, what, over 300 by the time they finished up?
Yeah, by the time they finished reshoots and stuff. I mean, For Dawn this of kind of movie, $250 million is, it's probably, I would think it's a little bit short of what I would expect it to be.
That's what I was wondering.
The bigger thing here is that when you flash up, I gave this guy a $1 billion check.
Insane. No, it's still insane, dude. And it shows a, like, full commitment from the studio to James Cameron and to the vision, I guess, for those movies.
From one studio head who's laying his entire life on the line for four sequels to a movie that was released in 2009.
And that's the thing. It's because they're basically saying, we're giving you $1 billion, so you're going to do all four. We don't know if people want one. I know. I saw the first Avatar. It's a technological marvel. Fine. But do people want to pay to see four more of these? Especially when it's going to be 11, 12 years since the first one.
Dances with Wolves with Blue People coming 2021.
I mean, I'm kind of with you, Chad. With the original Avatar, where it stood out to me, like you said, technical marvel, right? It was the first one to use 3D in a not gimmicky feeling way, where like you felt more part of the environment when you were like on the bridge and everything. But I've never really liked the actual story part of Avatar that much, or the actual movie part. I guess I find it hard to relate at times with the main character's motivations kind of betraying humanity there for the aliens. Because they say you could say you wanted to walk in, but weren't the humans going to give him the ability to walk again anyway?
Yeah.
Hey, man, love conquers all.
Yeah. I don't know. So, I mean, it was, and plus that was the same year District 9 came out. Yeah. I got into a weird District 9 versus Avatar, like fanboy battle where I was very, very team District 9. So that, I think I have a bit of personal bias in this as well.
Peter Jackson produced District 9.
Because him and Blomkamp were trying to make that Halo movie together, which never actually worked out. They made a real life Warthog, though. I saw it at Weta Workshop. We went there for a honeymoon. It's great. It's a cool Warthog.
Sounds awesome. Well, you know, these movies are being filmed in New Zealand. New Zealand gave James Cameron tax break so that he could come film his movies there.
It's worked out for New Zealand in the past, signing a multi-movie mega deal.
I'm not knocking New Zealand at all. I still don't, like, I need to see, like, something. I can't see a green screen. Can't see somebody talking about we're doing this. Because he's been saying this stuff for, like, 4 years. Hey, yeah, we're going to do this, so.
Held people hostage in a room to make them write all four of them.
Wait, really? Give me the backstory on this. So what is the dirt on
Cameron? Cameron at one point commissioned a writer's room. And in the writer's room, he held people and assigned each of them a movie, one of the four sequels to write. And had on a whiteboard each one of the stories and where they were supposed to be. And
how can you write four sequels concurrently, though?
That he had one. He had groups on each one of the four. But they were aware of the overarching story. But they were locked literally in a room away from men, women, and children for like a year and a half.
So even God, that sounds very stressful. That's terrible.
With James Cameron looking over you, like demanding that you do this.
So do you have a general outline, though, of the four or five movies, obviously, then? And this is just fleshing out the act, like how you get there?
Basically, my understanding of it was that Cameron was like, we're going to do the first movie, we're going to focus on the waters and the rivers and the oceans of Pandora. And the next one, we're going to do this. And the next one, we're going to do that.
So he's all in on Pandora.
And then we're going to have the Godfather story told with blue people. And it's your job to sit in this room for a year and figure out how to make the Avatar sequels the equivalent to the Godfather sequels.
Wow. Now, do we expect anything as technologically advanced as you've gotten Avatar one though here in these movies? Because I am looking forward to whatever he's got up his sleeve in that regard.
He's talking about trying to make 3D glassesless 3D.
Oh,
so if he can pull that off, that I will go gladly see the movies for that. But I don't know how many of those tricks he's gonna have in his bag for four movies.
That's true.
And he's also talking about photorealistic water, like water and fire have traditionally been the hardest special effects to pull off, and he's talking about that he's discovered a way to make water like photorealistic and like easier to do.
See, that's interesting to me, because I feel like water's actually something that people do relatively well. Like I don't know, I feel like there's been some, but I guess it's normally a combination of just real water and kind of fake water just interspersed throughout to try to trick you. I'll give James Cameron the benefit of the doubt in that regard, and all the armies of how many people do you think will just have to sit there on computers doing the most mind-numbing, what is it, like rotoscoping and everything?
Yeah, that's that the end credit scene will probably be like, you know, another hour itself with just the CGI guys that have done all this work.
Oh man, all right, so Avatars 2 through 5.
Yeah, so here's the deal. The way that he wants to work it is he's gonna film 2 and 3 concurrently and hope Sigourney Weaver's around when they come back to do 4 and 5.
Okay, so that's what I was going to ask. Where does this all fall in the story? Where does the stories fall in relation to the original Avatar? Do we know?
We will be years later because they have a bunch of kids.
Yeah.
Oh.
You see this list right here? This is all their kids.
Yeah, they're different clans, like the
Sully clan.
The human, I'm just going to call him the human.
Oh, so
Navi
Sully
clan.
Is...
That's the
guy.
Jake yeah, Sully, guy. Yeah.
Yeah. What's that actor's name again?
Sam Worthington.
He had a bit of a... He was on a heater in 2009, wasn't he? I'm not saying he made good movies, but he got cast in a lot of
he was coming
movies.
Off,
wasn't he in Terminator or something?
No, he was coming off
yes,
of,
he was.
He it's, was, but he was also coming off of...
Clash of the Titans.
Clash of the Titans, yeah. And wasn't he in...
And these were all big budget. Like I said, none of them were necessarily
that good.
Wasn't
he the guy in Hurt Locker?
Maybe he was.
Jeremy Renner was the main character in Hurt Locker.
Yeah, he in wrestling parlance, he was. They were trying to push him real hard.
They were trying to put him over the top,
yeah.
Right?
That's what
they
said. He was the Roman Reigns of 2009.
Yep. Why does Roman Reigns get so much hate? I get very like. I feel like I get little like echoes. It's like a radiation pulse off the sun when it comes to wrestling. And the latest one that I've been hearing is more Roman Reigns, like WWE going out of their way to put him over.
Because that's a whole nother conversation.
Yeah, you're right. I'm derailing. Like, let's stay on task.
But like what they're doing here, what they were trying to do with him, and what Hollywood tried to do with Jai Courtney and a few others along the way is decide that this is going to be their next Val Kilmer. This is going to be their next Tom Cruise. This is going to be their next guy they're going to push to superstardom. And as happens with professional wrestling, occasionally it doesn't take.
No.
Either because they don't have the ability to actually carry that kind of a brand, or because the audience just straight up rejects them.
Yeah.
As not worth that kind of a push. So
Or I mean, and you could just make bad movies. Like, he kind of got stuck
tied
in
to bad projects
with Terminator and Clash of the Titans.
Yeah, Avatar is like the best thing he's in, and nobody remembers that he's in it. You had to ask what his name was. So,
but yes, all of these are like different clans, but like, you know, the Sully family, the Matia clan, the former Hell's Gate adolescents.
See, this is maybe a bit of a red flag, is that, like, lore-wise, none of these names mean anything to me. And I'm sure if I'm, like, a bigger Avatar fan, it would, but, like...
No, the whole thing
who's
is...
Who's the Hell's Gate? What is Hell's Gate?
Hell's Gate was the platform, the community that they were all living in, the humans were living in.
Oh, okay.
When they were trying to, you know, knock down all the trees and rob the core of all of its materials.
See, you're telling me stuff. I've only seen Avatar once, and I saw it just to see it.
I mean, I own the thing on DVD, but, like... You know, I feel bad because I had friends who, like, bought a 3D TV and a 3D Blu-ray just for Avatar. That thing never gets used anymore.
Oh, I forgot about 3D TVs.
Yeah.
ESPN 3D, you remember that? That was the thing.
No,
I forgot about that.
Yeah, broadcasting national championship games in 3D.
That nobody watched.
Yeah. Mm. So, I mean, I just can't get over the fact that somebody decided, okay, James, here you go. No one told him no. No one hesitated. No one batted an eye when he committed human rights violations by locking people in a room for a year and a half. Like, no one said, hey, it's been almost 10 years. No one cosplays as Na'vi when they go to conventions. It hasn't stayed culturally relevant.
No one does. They're right. Cosplay is always a great way to judge the health of an IP.
Right. Mm-hmm. And there haven't been comic books put out like to continue the story. There's been no novels. There's no like Avatar expanded universe. And yet we're going to give you a check for $1 billion.
But you know why? Because if you open Box Office Mojo, top two on the list. James Cameron.
That's about to say, it's really just a testament to how trustworthy he's made his name. I didn't know that. So is he the second highest grossing director
ever?
He's the top.
He's got Titanic and Avatar.
His last two movies.
Yeah, and they're the last two.
Wait. Avatar is what? It's the second highest grossing movie?
Avatar is number one. It beat Titanic. Titanic's been there for years.
Avatar
is this world box office?
Yes. Yeah. Over $2 billion.
Avatar's the number one of all time.
Over $2.5 billion.
I think it's what Avatar, Titanic, and then Force Awakens.
Yeah.
So what? Yeah. What the hell are we talking about then? I mean, he's right. People must love Avatar. I guess
they loved Avatar because they were really cool 3D and it made 3D relevant again.
Yeah. Damn, that's crazy though.
And it stayed in like Titanic. It stayed in theaters for a long time.
My oldest sister was definitely one of those teens that was in love with Leonardo, and I think she saw Titanic 15 times in theater. She was fully caught up in the craze.
That's how Titanic made his money. It was in theaters for, I think, a full year.
It was the first boobs I ever saw.
Just making money.
It was Kate Winslet.
Kate Winslet's tatas. Yes.
I've only seen Titanic once, and I fell asleep 10 minutes in, and this was at home, and I woke up in time to change the VHS, so that's when the ship... That's when the ship hit the
iceberg. Forgot about
the two. Wait, so you've never actually seen Titanic?
So I've seen the last part after the ship.
No, but you've never seen like the whole movie all the way through.
No.
Okay, it's actually probably my favorite James Cameron movie, I guess.
I don't know. You were a pretty big fan of True Lies.
That's true.
Which is getting its own TV series.
True Lies is great because, of course, it is.
Yeah.
Or my favorite is Terminator 2, which
that's true. I guess you know what though. Oddly enough,
and then there's Aliens.
See, I'm not a big Aliens fan because I love Alien, and I felt like it was just like, I mean, it's a completely different movie. It changes everything.
Those are three different, completely different movies.
Yes, from that's a fair point.
From three very distinct filmmakers, Ridley Scott, James Cameron, and David Fincher.
Yeah, no, I actually should probably go back and rewatch the Terminator series, T1 and T2, because I don't think I've actually seen themselves little kids.
Well, that actually comes to a very nice transition for us there, T-Bob.
Nice.
Because secretly, unbeknownst to man or woman or God, James Cameron was secretly working with the people behind Skydance to revamp the Terminator franchise. And for a year, he worked creatively in secret to bring about the reuniting of Linda Hamilton with Arnold Schwarzenegger and himself. But he couldn't direct because he had this thing called Avatar. So he went and he got the guy who did Deadpool to sign on agree in secret to direct the true Terminator 3.
Oh, was this, so was he attached, like where, did he do this next to the writing room? Was this in the room next door?
This was on Skype.
Okay.
This was on Skype from New Zealand.
Okay.
Where he was like, you know, y'all do this and I'll check in, and but this is where I want to go. This is my idea for how to bring bring Terminator into the 2020s.
So who's the bigger Terminator fan out of y'all two?
I mean, I like T2.
I much prefer T1 and T2 to anything that came after, which is why I'm happy obviously. That he is ignoring everything else.
Yeah, I think I've seen T3 once, and it was like on TBS. Yeah.
I saw T3 in theaters, and it was the equivalent of watching Jurassic Park 3.
Mm-hmm.
It's an okay movie if you're stuck on an airplane for 3.5 hours and you have to watch something.
I actually, I think those are okay movies for like on the weekend, maybe a Sunday morning, Sunday during the day, you're chilling, doing nothing. On airplane, I kind of want to be entertained because if the movie sucks, then I'm like... Where's getting uncomfortable, and then we're hitting turbulence, and like we're gonna crash and die now, and I'm gonna be distracted by this movie. So I don't know if I'd watch it there. But I've never. So they're going Star Wars Extended Universe style, then just ripping off the Band-Aid.
Yeah.
Well, their idea, which I can completely agree with, the moment I saw Linda Hamilton was coming back, I knew they were gonna eliminate everything else, because in T3 the whole deal is she's dead. She committed either she committed suicide or she died of cancer or something.
And if there's ever been a series, I can do an alternate timeline thing.
Well, yeah. And also the fact that, like, Cameron, I think, has had these kind of ideas floating around in his head since T2. And I think we're actually going to get James Cameron's idea of a Terminator 3.
Man.
Which, you know, I would have loved to have seen in 1997. Instead, I got a movie about a necklace and... A ship sinking.
It was a good movie, though.
It was.
It was a good movie.
It was.
Yep. Check the receipts. So he made the right decision.
So what do we think about James Cameron re-entering the world of Terminator?
Like I've been saying since they've announced this, I'm cautiously optimistic because I like Tim Miller. I do like James Cameron in Terminator if he's actually doing Terminator. So I'm cautiously optimistic, but, I mean... I don't know if this, like, everybody keeps trying to make this a franchise, and every time they step up to the plate, they strike out. So maybe he's got the magic touch, or maybe this is just not something that is a franchise. It's just two movies.
How old is Arnold now?
I mean,
70s, right? What about Linda Hamilton?
In her 60s.
Yeah.
60s? All right. I mean, I'm going to reserve judgment, but it's going to be interesting to see how they implement those two. Legitimate physical limitations there in terms of like what you can and can't film and stuff.
Well, like that was part of the deal, was like Linda Hamilton, like he was trying to puff her up and lift her up as like, see, I don't hate women. I'm giving this prominent role to return a prominent action hero to the world, and you know there aren't a lot of action hero movies for, you know, women in their 60s.
That is true. If he makes her into a badass, that would actually be a pretty cool kind of accomplishment there, making you cheer for an action hero. It's actually like a woman in her 60s. It's not your typical action hero.
And then he takes a huge jump on that later. But, I mean, like, the idea there is, look, if you're dealing with like James Cameron Terminator 3, you're dealing with like Skynet still has not become active. She's still the same personality and dominant type that we know from T2 and from the Sarah Connor Chronicles, which is one of the strongest portrayals of a female ever on film. You know, the boy is going to be coming of age. Like, depending on where you put this in the timeline, John Connor is probably going to be in his late teens, early 20s.
Yeah.
Which the mother-son dynamic there was always very complex and interesting, because for Sarah Connor, you're basically in the same position as Mary Magdalene. Like, you're raising the person who is going to save the entire universe. The
chosen one.
Right, and you now have to push him to get him prepared to be that military leader.
I wonder... I wonder, so would he be 20-something in the movie, though?
Well, we depend. We don't know where he is setting things up. And yes, I understand jokes about an Immaculate Conception.
No. You said Mary Magdalene. Mary Magdalene was the, yeah.
Oh, yeah, she was the Lady of the Night.
Yeah, it's just regular Mary.
This is true.
Jesus kept interesting company.
Very interesting.
which should be
a lesson to us all.
So what they're going to do then is, for Arnold, we're going to see. Thank God, I've been waiting for it. I've been writing letters asking for it. The return of fully 3D Arnold.
Yeah.
Right. Let's just cut out Arnold completely and just. I'm fucking. I'm kidding. Well, I mean, I don't want to see. I don't want to see fully 3D Arnold again.
Actually, I was hoping that the next project that he would do would be his Old Man Conan story.
Old Man Conan could be tight. I've actually never seen the original Conan, so just the idea of that appeals to me. I know, I apologize.
No.
Marvin's looking at me like crazy.
We just had this whole discussion before we came over here. And by the way, since we have a ghost fourth person that just keeps chiming in, it's my friend Marvin sitting over here. But we just had this conversation about Conan, because I've never seen Conan either.
Yeah.
And he looked at me like I wasn't a child of God, and I'd done something wrong in the world. So now, it's 50-50 now, so you can't say nothing.
I do love, the Conan line, though, is still about what is best in life, is still one of the great all-time lines.
Yeah. My thing is, with that property, is talking about him doing it the way that he was going to do it, because the Momoa reboot did not take off.
No, when we saw that, actually, that was one of, when I was playing at LSU, that was one of our Friday night movies that we saw, and it was like, whatever, right? Yeah. I mean, it wasn't terrible, it wasn't like offensively bad, but it wasn't terribly good either.
No, actually, I own that movie. I got it for free, and I've never watched it, but I own it.
But, I mean, Old Man Conan was the thing I was hoping that he would do next, because I think there's enough social relevance of, you know, How does one great warrior deal with becoming old? How do you deal with coming of age, especially in a kingdom setting, where people are going to, as you get older, start coming for your throne, and you lose the ability eventually to defend your throne with physical might, and you know, eventually learning new ways to, in the Game of Thrones type manner.
Yeah, learning, it's Conan having to learn how to be a little more intellectual.
And that was, I thought, a much more compelling character for him to take on than Terminator, who he's done every time except for Salvation.
Yes. So. And even when there, like, a 3D Arnold?
Yeah, there was a 3D Arnold in Salvation, because he was...
That's the 3D Arnold I was talking about.
Yeah, because he's too because he was too busy being governor of California at that point.
Yeah, it was fully 3D, and maybe a little too early in the technology timeline for something that ambitious. Looked... Nothing like I think that Rogue One actually pulled that off. It doesn't translate as well to theaters or to the home televisions, but like seeing Rogue One in IMAX in theaters, I was shocked when you saw Tarkin and when you saw Leia. Same cannot be said for Arnold. But like you said, that was what, 10 years ago almost.
Yeah, at least.
So let's move on to Cameron's comments, as we're starting this A block of the show off with James Cameron news. Chad, would you like to inform the good people what the man had to say about his Wonder Woman comments, which drew some ire?
So before I read it, I'll just say James Cameron is a dick. like you had a way out, and you chose not to take it. There was this controversy. He talked about how Wonder Woman didn't really accomplish anything, that it wasn't the empowering or a
She wasn't a damaged character. She was just a happy character had strength.
That was his point. His point was, to have a strong female character, she can't just be like hopeful and kind of pure like Wonder Woman was. She has to be like damaged and going through some stuff.
Has to have something to overcome.
Yeah, like Sarah Connor. So he said this, and Patty Jenkins blasted him, and everybody on the internet blasted him. So he announces Linda Hamilton's coming back, Sarah Connor. That's his gateway to get out of this. And like, that's not what I meant, but I brought Sarah Connor back so everybody can forget that I said this. But as I said, he's a dick. So he's like, no. So I said it, and I'm going to keep saying it. And he goes on to talk about Linda Hamilton and another Wonder Woman thing. I won't read the whole thing. But this part of the quote is, she wasn't there to, in reference to Linda Hamilton, she wasn't there to be liked or ogled, but she was central, and the audience loved her by the end of the film. So as much as I applaud Patty directing the film in Hollywood, air quotes, letting a woman direct a major action franchise, I didn't think there was anything groundbreaking in Wonder Woman. I thought it was a gun film, period. It was certainly shocking that my comment was a controversial statement. It was pretty obvious in my mind. I just think Hollywood doesn't get it about women in commercial franchises. Drama they've cracked, but the second they start to make a big commercial action film, they think they have to appeal to 18-year-old males or 14-year-old males, whatever it is. Look, it was probably a little bit of a simplistic remark on my part, but I'm not walking it back. But I will add a little detail, which is, I like the fact that sexually, she had the upper hand with the male character, which I thought was fun. So yeah, like.
And now Patty Jenkins is his ex-wife, right?
No.
Or that's okay. That's the Hurt Locker director.
Yes, Catherine Bigelow.
Oh, okay, Bigelow. Okay, yeah. Never mind. So it's not his ex-wife.
Yeah. So even in this comment, like if he stops at like the first sentence, he's probably okay. But then he throws in that part at the end that has to be like basically saying Wonder Woman is just simply a sexual object and cannot be compared with my great character.
I think I guess my only issue with this is just to act like there's any, like there is one avenue to creating an interesting female character. You know, that she has to be flawed or broken in some way. And this could apply to male or female. Like, there's no one avenue to create a good character. You can have a Mary Sue type of character. I know people use that like in a negative connotation a lot of times, but you can have characters like that that work, mm-hmm. that you cheer for, that are likable, that are fun to watch, and that you enjoy. So, like, to me, this is just him more saying, like, in my opinion, like, I don't find those type of characters very interesting. And I think there's a lot of people who would disagree.
And I think if he would just say, you know, just this is just strictly my opinion, I understand why everybody else feels that way, but it sounds like he's saying, this is my opinion, and I think my opinion is right, and I don't understand why y'all don't see it that way.
And I think it also comes off as, I know other people in this business who feel the same way.
And he's not the only one that thinks
this. By the way, if he wants to make this statement earlier in the portion here where he talks about, you know, her form-fitting costume and being extremely busty, and she was Miss Israel and all of this, go watch that workout scene of Linda Hamilton trapped in the insane asylum in T2. She's literally working out in like a crop top, tank top, showing a good bit of cleavage, all hot and sweaty.
Well, Sigourney gets down too to just her undies in a tank top, right?
Right. So like, it's not like
so he knows how to play the game,
right?
Yeah. He knows how to throw enough appeal in there,
right? It's not like he's above that over-sexualization of female characters.
Now, I will say this, in that...
And the Na'vi are all naked anyway.
I've seen a lot of things on the internet, and unfortunately...
Things you cannot unsee.
Avatar Rule 34 is among them. It's just, the internet leads to weird places. I will say this. So I do feel like there are a lot of times where people do go out of their way to sexualize a female lead, and it doesn't always work. And I do that is one of the reasons why when I saw The Force Awakens, I was like, oh man, I almost wish I had a daughter so that like she could cheer for Rey. Because Rey is someone who, look, a lot of people go back to the Mary Sue thing, they call Rey Mary Sue, but she is a character who I think is just a badass. I think she's very likable, and she's not really sexualized in any way. Very practical outfit for being a scavenger, et cetera, et cetera. So
that's a good example, because my daughter loves Rey, and
really,
yeah, she just sees her as, you know, the hero of the story, and
which
that's
she is.
It. So there's different ways to do this, and he's pointing to the sexuality of Wonder Woman, and there's no way you do Wonder Woman without the sexuality. I mean, she was created, if you know the story of why she was created.
Which they're making a movie about. I saw a preview before Mother advertising for
it. The guy, I forget his name, but he's the guy that made The Lie Detector. He, when he made her, I mean, if you watch the trailer for that movie, he's into like, he's basically got two wives. He's into like bondage and stuff.
And control.
And he incorporated all of that into Wonder Woman. So you can't have Wonder Woman without having that part of her. But that doesn't make her an overly sexualized character in the movie.
Yes.
And you can have a character that exudes sexiness and still be a strong female character.
Yes. And let me be clear. I'm not, and I don't want to sound like I'm saying that it's inherently better one way or another. Like we said, I just think that there's room for both.
There's creative differences. There's creative perspectives. My biggest issue with Wonder Woman as a whole was like we didn't need her boning
Steve Trevor.
Yeah, we didn't need her boning before she headed off to war.
Yeah, but you know, like, Wonder Woman, she wanted to get laid.
She read the Kama Sutra like 8,000 times.
I mean,
apparently.
She wanted to get laid, dude. I would too if I was about to have to go fight. Right,
might not be coming
back. I mean, that's what everybody does, right? That's why you had the baby boom after World War II. You bang it out before you go put your life at risk.
So let's move on from banging it out and from Wonder Woman.
Oh wait, I think I saw Chad was a bit upset. Were you upset with this news on Twitter the other day? Did I skip ahead?
You did. There's like I am upset by that. Preview.
Something about Superman theme being used in Justice League. We'll get there though.
All right. So this is where we move to the DC part of our news.
Yes.
Which is one of those things where it's kind of like Jumanji. I have my Jumanji issues. Chad has his DC issues. but we know that Danny Elfman, who is a frequent collaborator of Joss Whedon, was brought on board to replace Junkie XL when the transition from...
Who's Junkie XL?
From Joss Whedon to... From Zach to Joss was made. Junkie XL was the composer who did Dawn of Justice with Hans Superman Zimmer. Theme for Dawn of
Justice. Name, he calls himself Junkie XL.
Yeah, if I told you, I don't remember his real name, but Junkie XL is much easier to remember.
So it's like a McGee situation?
Pretty much.
Kind of, yeah.
And so he announced that he was doing an interview and he talked this week about the possibility of tweaking some things and some themes and playing on some notations with darker connotations. Your thoughts, sir, on the words dark and heavy and dramatic being thrown around with the DCEU?
So I have lots of thoughts. I wasn't going to start with dark and all of that. But since you brought it up, when he specifically references that part in there saying he's going to use John Williams' themes, but he's going to take it to like a dark place. He also says like this is a point in the movie where we don't know what side he's on. So he doesn't say who the he is, but since we're talking about Superman theme, we can assume it's Superman. So I'm assuming that this is the part Superman comes back and he's just waking up and they don't know what side is he going to be on the Justice League side? He's going to be on the other side. Mm. And so I'm guessing that has something to do with how he's resurrected. Like that part, technically I have no problem with. That's like a story part. We don't know what the story is till we see it. So I'm like, I'm fine with that. I'm actually not so upset with the context of with which they're using John Williams' theme, because it sounds like it's just this. The theme is just in this one part.
Yeah.
And I get what they're going for. They've been bashed over the head, so they want to invoke feelings of the old movies that people like.
For the nostalgia.
Yeah. So. Quickest way to nostalgia is music. You hit them with something they know and they're like, oh, okay, maybe I can associate this with the one I knew before and maybe I like this better. So I get what they're going for. But I'm one of those people I know lots of people that love the Hans Zimmer Man of Steel theme. And if you've actually listened to just the actual Superman portion of that theme, which is at the very end, you don't actually hear it until the very end when he walks in the Daily Planet and he smiles and then there's this big hopeful Superman theme. And I think that is fitting for what they tell us Superman is in these movies. We haven't seen him be that, but that's what they're trying to tell us that he is. So I didn't want to see them get rid of that. And then he also talks later about using the Batman theme, which I'm assuming is his Batman theme. So from Batman 89, also from Batman the animated series.
So Elfman did Batman back in the day.
Yeah.
Mike Keaton's Batman.
And he did animated series.
They took the theme from the movie and used it.
Okay.
And then they kind of morphed it with the composer that orchestrated the orchestra for that session. She took over composing the series. So it's a lot of carryover into the animated series. So he's going to bring, it sounds like he's bringing in at least parts of his theme. And I know I'm on an island on this one, but I like the Batman theme from Batman vs. Superman. Again, it's one that people haven't really heard because they don't play it like the, like, you know, the superhero march kind of thing with it. You actually have to listen to the actual soundtrack, and there's this whole big Batman suite. And at the tail end is like the big orchestra, heroic version of the Batman theme. And I think a lot of people would like
I can't really even think about what it sounds like off the top of my head, which is unfortunate.
They play it through the whole movie, and the way they use it, they do it with different things. Like at the very beginning, they're playing it on the piano because he's with his parents, and they're about to die. And then through most of the movie, it's like really, really heavy because he's like pissed off and killing people. So it's like beating you over the head with it. But when they do it, like I call it the march form, it's like if I were to put it on a trailer and like I want to sell you on this is Batman, this is the part that they do. I think if people listen to it, they would like it more.
So the problem may not be with the theme as much as how it was maybe implemented.
Yeah, there's I think that's part of Junkie XL because Hans Zimmer brought him in because he had just did a Batman theme with The Dark Knight, and he was like, you know, I can't really do Batman again, so I'm going to bring this guy in. And Junkie was like, it's a nice theme, but when they use it, it's like, no, we're going to beat you over the head with it. Like, it's either going to be really soft, or I'm going to take a hammer and beat you over the head with it. So I understand, again, going for the nostalgia with the Batman for that. If it's just a nostalgia piece, I'm good. But I think one of the things DC had over Marvel is that, you know, you might not, particularly with Man of Steel, you might not think of the theme right off, but if you heard it, you'd be like, oh yeah, that's Superman theme.
That's fair.
Marvel has rotated their composers, whereas nobody knows a theme for any of these characters
outside of the Avengers theme.
They've had some good Avengers and Guardians. They have themes and they keep those through the whole thing. The rest of them, you know, you can't really just hit or miss. And having themes establishes those characters in people's minds because, again, music, and you play it and people know it. Like, Marvin's sitting over here and it's like, which one is the Christopher Reeve theme? John Williams. I say that, he knows what it is. He gets so happy, he's like, that's the only theme. That's the kind of thing you want to have with these characters. I don't think you should stick to the John Williams theme or the Danny Elfman theme because it's, while it's the same character, they're different.
Yeah.
So you want to give them their own theme that will still be identifiable as Batman or Superman or Wonder Woman, but not be the same one you think of from 30 years ago. So that's more or less my rant on the DC music.
And you like the idea of you know, basically laying foundations for other characters that if they want to come back and build on them later, they can.
Yeah, that was always the thing with Hans Zimmer anyway. He was constructing it in a way that they can put all those themes together and kind of make the Justice League theme. So we're clearly changing direction, but Danny's like, okay, I'm going to give you bits and pieces. You can take these and run with them in their own movie. So
yeah, that's talking about, he answered a question about if he created themes for every member, and said that, well, he didn't do big themes for everything. He created motifs for Flash, Aquaman, Cyborg, that DC cannot, like you said, build upon in the future. Which makes sense. Why didn't he mention Green Lantern, though, huh?
Because we don't...
What's wrong, Danny?
I mean, technically, Green Lantern is not in this movie.
Oh, he's not
in
this movie?
But if you look at the advertising, Superman's not in it either, so...
Well, the longest running theory was that old notion of him coming down at the end of part one and being like, there's this guy named Darkseid that's coming, y'all might want to get prepared for him.
Oh, like have like an already established
they're doing
patrolling sector 2814.
Of the 5,000 projects currently in development at DC Films is a film called Green Lantern Corps, which would involve multiple lanterns, not just Hal Stewart. Hal Jordan. So,
ooh, Hal Stewart. Yeah, you just pulled a little combination. Hal Stewart, Gardner, Rayner.
Well, I mean that in that film, all of them run together.
Want my Kyle Rayner movie.
You know, I'm right there with you. That's my Green Lantern.
Me too, man. I want a Kyle Rayner movie where Hal Jordan's already gone insane, or maybe opens with him destroying the Green Lantern Corps. Rayner gets the ring from Ganthet, final Green Lantern learning his way, Alex stuffed in the fridge, all of it. That's what I want.
But since it seems like Jeff Johns is kind of in control of this, that ain't going to happen.
No.
Because Hal Jordan is his Green Lantern, and he ain't going nowhere.
Yeah, we know that from the new 52 iteration.
We all love
iteration.
Baseball bats and trains, right? Because then jet planes, because those are the constructs that you get from HAL.
Yeah, I mean, it's...
Kyle used to give us samurai mech warriors and, like, pirates riding spaceships and, like, all kinds of awesome stuff.
That was the best idea ever. You're going to give a guy that can make anything he wants in his mind. Yes. Let's make him a comic book artist.
Yeah.
So he can do fun, crazy, outlandish stuff and have an excuse to do it.
Oh, it's so good, man. And they actually, okay, for any Kyle Rayner fans out there, they actually are re-releasing a, comes out this month, a Kyle Rayner Volume 1,
I
think.
I think it's... It's either this week or next week. But
yeah, I got it. How many issues is it?
I don't know. I know it starts in 51, but I think it's probably.
So it's Emerald Twilight is the series, is this point in story where Hal goes crazy, and the Emerald Dawn is
when
Kyle's first adventures, right?
Yeah, I would think it goes to at least past him fighting Major Force the first time after he kills
Major
Alex.
Force. What an asshole! Even though Kyle gets Major Force back in the end. Cutting off his head and throwing it into space.
See,
does Force ever come back from that?
I don't know, because I know he's died like twice. And because the first time it came down between Guy and Kyle fighting him. And it was like, will Kyle finally kill him for killing his girlfriend? And Kyle's like, he does the hero thing. No, I'm going to walk away. And Guy's like, well, I'm not. And he just shoves his fist through his chest and is like, lets him bleed out. But then, like, Major Force is back, and I have no idea why.
So even though he must have some sort of healing factor, though, because I want to say even when Kyle cuts his head off, he's, like, still alive.
Yeah, I think he's
But then he jettisons it into space.
Yeah, I think he's kind of like, he's one of these weird energy beings, so it's like, I don't think you can really kill him.
Mm.
But he's weird.
When are they going to make a Lobo movie?
I wouldn't be surprised if it's on the list.
It's actually in the thing we'll talk about a little bit later. They reference the old... like, there was a slate before Man of Steel, like around Green Lantern time, and Lobo was on that slate.
Oh, man.
And I think that's where the rumors of The Rock being Lobo came from.
Yes.
Oh, The Rock being Lobo. Yeah.
So let's move on and talk about the DC NWO.
New World Order.
This is...
So, you know, we've had fun on this podcast, dragging Chad through the mud on various DC properties as the man... consistently begged for 1 week where he did not have to talk about DC.
I almost got it last week, like instead of you know when you want to be an asshole and bring it up, but
no sir because see I had to talk about an individual who eats cake at the end of that episode, so
that's because they released the trailer. I didn't make the trailer come out. You're the one that kept saying, you know, DC. But I almost got past this week until Danny Elfman opened his mouth, and then Friday are like, here, take all of this and read it, and then have fun with it.
So there was a article, was it a Hollywood Reporter?
I think it was Vanity Fair.
Vanity. Mm. That pretty much was like, we've learned our lesson. We're going to kind of slow up on this rushing thing, and we're going to take our time and kind of build out from
really?
There. Yeah, it was a whole detail thing. It pretty much starts from 2008, detailing everything with DC Films. It's really long, but if you have the time, I recommend you go and read it. It talks about their struggles when they have the Batman franchise, and then they want to Marvel comes along, so they want to get into that game, but they can't touch Batman, and they've got certain other movies coming out.
Things that we always knew that like they wanted Nolan to do a interconnected universe and a Justice League movie,
and
Nolan
was like,
"Nah, bruh, I'm gonna go do Interstellar."
So they put their eggs into the Green Lantern basket, but they locked out the creative people from Green Lantern, like Geoff Johns and Diane Nelson, and we got what we got. And then it goes all the way until Man of Steel, where they're saying, "We want to do this interconnected universe again," and again they lock out Geoff Johns and Diane Nelson.
Wait, so this whole time I've kind of been blaming Geoff Johns.
Yeah, it's. From this is like, I know there's some spin to this, but I mean, this is pretty much like saying, you can start blaming Geoff Johns starting at Wonder Woman. Everything else before that, like, yeah, he was cheerleading it, but he had no input on it.
Weren't they calling him like the like head of like
that didn't come into effect till after Dawn of Justice.
Yeah, after Dawn of Justice, they're like, okay, we'll let him in the room, and from here,
like the actual guy who understands the books in the room.
Yeah, so they finally let him in the room after that, and the most influence he's had so far is Wonder Woman, the movie that most people have a positive reception to. But yeah, it's really interesting. But some of the
Sorry to interrupt. Is this talking about then that the Batman movie with Ben Affleck's not going to be a part of the?
They don't say that. They mention it, but they never say like definitively it's going to be part of DCEU.
And we also not. And we're also in this weird place where like we're gonna be jumping off into one-off solo movies with like the Joker starring Leonardo DiCaprio, produced by Martin Scorsese, directed by Todd Phillips.
Yeah, they did confirm that they're going to have that spinoff brand. They didn't have a name, but they said we will find out soon. I'm still not thrilled about that. But,
New 52.
You know, it's whatever. John seems to be in control of that too, so we'll give it a shot. But the main thing and the articles that spun out of this from all the other sites was that, you know, DC is stepping back from the big branded universe. And the way I read the article is that's not what they're doing. They're still keeping a universe, but all the films will be pretty much standalone. Like, you've seen Wonder Woman. That's the goal from here on out. Like, you might have, like, it's...
Which is, I mean, that's honestly, I mean, is that dissimilar from what...
Phase one.
Marvel has done, like, in the beginning, where it was just a stinger at the end and maybe a couple Easter eggs, like, interspersed.
That's what Marvel did at the beginning, and I think that's the way it should be. Yeah, they've built up to this point where they can do all this stuff together, like Homecoming, which is more involved than other movies. But, like, they still do Guardians, and Guardians has nobody else there. It's just the Guardians.
So hopefully we won't run into another situation where they make Batman and Superman meet, discover Wonder Woman, create Doomsday, and kill Superman all in the same movie.
Also while finding the Flash and Aquaman and Cyborg.
That's right.
Yeah. Hopefully we won't have that again. That's the approach that I want. I want the movie should be their standalone. They tell their story, and when it's time to bring them together, they bring them together. That's how this should go.
I love DC. I would love nothing more than for DC to make good movies.
You and me both, pal.
Where's your confidence level at? What's the check this week for Dawn of Justice out of 10? 10 being very confident, 1 not confident at all.
Justice League, I'm going to go 4, and that's only because I've heard they've had test screenings of Justice League, and all the people that know people that saw them are saying, you know, it's a good movie. Now, granted, that's probably only a handful of people because most people can't talk about it. So we got to take it with a grain of salt, but, you know, that's something.
Is Joss Whedon going to save Dawn of Justice?
That's the thing. If this turns out good, it's all Joss Whedon's to take in. If this is terrible, Zack Snyder's going to take all the blame.
Yeah, that's true. Joss is kind of in a win-win situation there.
And he gets to still make his Batgirl movie.
Yep. Yeah, they talk about that. Like they were having discussions, and they came up with him doing Batgirl. And in those discussions, they're like, oh, he can do, we want to have somebody else come in and write these scenes for Justice League. He can do it. So we'll give you back, girl. You do this.
Okay. Well, whatever. I hope it's for the best.
Yes. I think we all hope that.
Yeah. And just, you know, just get past Justice League. That's the name of the game at this point.
Okay. So.
Without hurting the brand too much. They're going full Fantastic
Four. Random news and notes here. Our friend Chad here is wearing a Venom shirt today. Michelle Williams, she of mostly Brokeback Mountain and Dawson's Creek fame, is joining Venom. It's a very odd thing that has caused cinema nerds to like freak out because it's like, oh my goodness, someone who's like only been doing like challenging roles for the last like 15 years is going to go do a comic book movie. What? This is insane. Why is she doing this to her career?
Wouldn't that be, I'm looking up who Michelle Williams is. So wouldn't that be good, though? Because then it's like you're getting like a serious, heavy-hitting actor.
Well, Tom Hardy's going to be the freaking Venom.
He's Venom, yeah.
I just like Tom Hardy.
So this movie, like the sum of all of its parts, I'm like, this movie sounds like it should be good. It's just that I don't want it to exist.
It's produced by Avi Arad.
Michelle Williams, excellent.
Yeah. I just say Dawson's Creek off the top of my head because that's the first.
The
first thing that
that's
I think
she,
of.
She was in that.
She was.
I never watched Dawson's
Her
Creek.
Her and
so
Katie
I didn't
Holmes
know.
And
I knew
James
Katie
Vanderbeek.
Holmes was, yeah.
And then the guy
and Pacey
and the guy from
what's his name?
And the kid from Mighty Ducks.
Yeah.
Who went on to do the Skulls and all.
Oh,
that.
Oh, that guy. Yeah,
Pacey.
Yeah. I forget his name, but the director, the outside of Avi Arad, all the cast, this movie sounds like, you know, it should be something good. However, I just don't think Venom should exist without Spider-Man, and that's what this movie's going to be. And I don't know how you...
No Spider-Man?
No, and like...
over Kevin Feige's dead body.
Yeah. Like, I think you're missing out a whole bunch of money to not go the natural progression of Spider-Man to symbiote to Venom, mm-hmm. and Spider-Man and Venom fight, and then you make a Venom movie.
Especially with Spider-Man ending up in space at some point in Infinity War.
Yeah, it's like, it's... I think you make more money that way.
So this movie's going to be like Topher Grace handing down the Venom suit to Tom Hardy.
We still don't know what it is.
They're not bringing Topher Grace back?
No, oh no, of course not. Do you know how fans revolted on that when it was announced? And after they walked out of Spider-Man 3, they were like, I was right.
Surely we'll get emo Parker back with the jazz flute.
No. Even though I appreciate that scene for giving me the James Brown song. I love that song. I would have never known about it if not for that movie. But that movie's still terrible.
So. That was Sam Raimi kind of jumping the shark there.
No, that was Avi jumping the shark. Avi pretty much was like...
I won't blame Avi for the whole...
presentation?
The dance scene, because Sam does that kind of goofy stuff. He has like a goofy moment like that in all of them. It's just like that one is just so there. You can't... gloss over that.
Well, you can't really do that with your big bad either, right? Like, you can't have your big bad guy villain become like just a really, really ill-advised punchline. There are better ways to probably go about that. Okay, yeah. But the new Venom movie, no Spider-Man.
Yeah. So just taking it at face value, her joining the cast is good news. I would assume that she's going to be Eddie Brock's wife. I think her name is Anne. They're estranged when they introduce her in the comics, and somewhere down the line, because, you know, comics, she has the symbiote as well and becomes like Lady Venom. I doubt they'll do that here, but, you know, I'm pretty sure that's the part she's going to play. I'm still thinking and hoping that this movie doesn't happen. They're supposed to start shooting later this month, but they were supposed to start shooting earlier this month, and that got pushed back. So I keep hoping they just kick it down the road and then, like, yeah, whatever happened to that Venom movie? I don't know, but thank you.
Well, I mean, Spider-Man Homecoming is the highest grossing comic book movie of the year, so.
That was good. I was wondering if they were going to be able to make Spider-Man interesting, and there's been so many cracks at it recently, and I was, like, especially turned off after Amazing Spider-Man 2, whatever it was. They nailed it, man. Homecoming was great.
All right.
The prom scene, driving with the
scene in the car is the one everybody talks about.
Oh, it was so damn
only
good.
Keaton could make that work.
It was so damn good. Keaton was great in that movie. I thought the vulture looked so stupid in the previews. Like, I had such low expectations, and they knocked it out of the park.
All right, so let's move on. So, Chad, there's going to be a Men in Black reboot.
Yay!
That does not involve the Jump Street people.
Hallelujah.
Your thoughts on Sony trying to make more money again?
Oh, that is actually my first thought. It's like, Sony's like, we need money. We need it now. Men in Black, we still got you. We got to put you to work. That's all I got from that. They don't have a director, a cast, a story, none of that. They're just like
Sam Worthington and Jai Courtney.
Yeah.
I'm going to put them over the top with this reboot.
Go ahead and do T-Bob's suggestion so we can get on this fast track to Disney buying Sony so I can get rid of this second Spider-Man universe.
And speaking of another way that Sony's trying to make money, they want to reboot the Charlie's Angels franchise.
So, did y'all like those movies?
McG. Yeah. They were good for 2005 and 2008.
I haven't seen them since 2005, and I don't know if like 16-year-old T-Bob's the best judge of... I don't know how
Cameron
I feel
Diaz
about it
running, Cameron Diaz and Lucy Liu running around in tight outfits was...
That was, I mean, yes, that made me enjoy it very much at the time. Maybe it hasn't aged as well.
So I like... The first one is fun. I don't remember the second one as much.
I don't remember
that
at all. I didn't even know there was a second one.
There was a second Full Throttle.
Yeah.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah, because we went from Bill Murray to Bernie Mac. Rest in peace. Right. It gave us Independent Women by Destiny's Child. So there's something that came out of that movie. So, I mean, they're fun.
A diverse cast. They're looking at Kristen Stewart and...
I do not get a very Charlie's Angels vibe from Kristen Stewart.
No, no, no. But Lupita Nyong'o.
Lupita Nyong'o, yeah.
Lupita Nyong'o.
Like, I think, she'll be good in anything she's put in.
She is.
She's going to be a standout, I think, in Black Panther.
What is her? She plays, what's the?
She's Masquerade.
Masquerade. There you go. Thank you. She's Masquerade. Yes.
Who will have a reduced role from even a reduced role where she just basically says, I have a story to tell. And one day, dadgummit, somebody's going to listen to my story. But
so
right
so Masquerade hasn't.
Masquerade has that scene in Force Awakens where she's like, there's a story behind that lightsaber, and I will tell it to you at another time, but not right now. Now is not the time.
Wait, but how do you know that her role is being lowered?
They said it. They said
so people just don't like Maz? It just like didn't catch on, I guess?
I don't even think it's that. I think it was just the cut of the movie is like, we have so much and we don't need her part as much. So I think she's just a victim of editing.
Yeah, happens.
Yeah, by the way, that movie is done, completely done.
Yes.
With no controversy.
Oh, wait, so are we done with anything else with Charlie's Angels? Can we move into a little Star Wars talk here at the end?
Yes, sure.
All right, nice.
So, tickets are going to go on sale probably
October 9th, so two weeks from Monday.
And there's going to be a trailer.
Yes, a trailer attached to a terrible football game. Yes.
And do we?
Which game is it?
Bears and Vikings. And do we need?
Bears look bad the other day.
Yeah.
Do we need Snoke in this trailer?
No.
And do we need a hopeful tone from Luke in this trailer?
No.
Do we need Progs in this trailer?
No. Okay. I'm saying all these no's. This is also coming from the man that has repeatedly said, all they have to do, give us a blank screen, a voiceover, light up a lightsaber, say Star Wars Last Jedi, wrap it up, and everybody's going to be like, give me my ticket right now, and we know absolutely
nothing. You're not wrong. Whoever did the trailer for Force Awakens, they should bring back, because that was a trailer that like felt like mainlining nostalgia without actually showing you anything about the movie.
The Chewie,
I think the Chewie were home trailer, yeah.
Which was the celebration trailer from 15.
Yeah, and it had like a couple like dog fighting, quick shots, X-Wing skimming over water, the Falcon. When you see the Falcon, the old music kicks in. I mean, but then, you know, it didn't really give me an idea of what was actually going to happen in the movie. There's way too many movies now, dude, that just they tell you the entire story.
Not these guys.
No, they're not gonna do that at all.
Not these guys. These guys are like, we're not even gonna show you the green lightsaber.
Yeah, that's all I want. I just want to see Luke light up a lightsaber so I can know which lightsaber it is and what color it is. I think it's green, but we don't know.
Now Rey's lightsaber is Luke's that he lost to Cloud City, right?
Yeah,
it's Anakin's blue lightsaber.
Right, which was originally Anakin's. Yeah, because Obi-Wan gave it to Luke.
Obi-Wan picked it off the burning corpse of his friend.
Did Luke make? Yeah. Oh yeah, that's true. I didn't really think about that. He did just straight up take that dude's lightsaber after he burned him up.
I mean, what's he going to use it for? He had one arm that's burnt to a crisp. He had no other appendages. What are you going
to
do with it?
Yeah, but like, the lightsaber was next to him, so that means he had to walk next to him while he's like writhing around in pain and just pick it up. Or I guess he just could have called it to
him. Okay, wait, let's replay this.
But remember, T-Bob, he had the high ground.
Yeah. Let's replay this. He's like, look, don't jump. I got the high ground. This is not going to end well. And the idiot jumped anyway. Everything that happened after that point is all your fault.
Yeah.
So I'm taking your lightsaber. I'm going to say that you died and gave it to your kid and make you look like a decent, upstanding human being.
And wait, so did Luke then, I guess I've never really thought about this, the green lightsaber, did Luke make his own kyber crystal?
The implication from Vader's line in the elevator is he's learned to build his own lightsaber.
Which is, for becoming a Jedi, a key step becoming a Jedi.
Because there's, 4 years in between Empire and Jedi, or is it three?
I've always wondered how much time.
Yeah, I don't remember. It's changed. Like, you know, before they wiped away the extended universe, it was their stories about how he does it, and so I don't know what it is, but it's like at least a year.
Yeah,
anywhere between a year or two.
See, I've always hoped that it would be like more like three or four, because I do feel like you see a ton of growth from Luke in between those two movies, and sometimes it feels like it's like bang, bang.
Yeah.
I was always under the impression that it was like 3 to 3 years in between Empire and Jedi. And
I like that, because then that means that Han's actually been frozen for a way longer time, which is kind of crazy to think about.
Right. So, tickets are going to go on sale. What do Chad, T-Bob, what do we need from this trailer?
When I know I want to see a movie, I will actually sometimes avoid trailers because, like, I don't want to see anything going into it. So I personally am such a fanboy. I don't need to see anything.
Yeah, I'm kind of the same way. But I mean, since we're going to get it, they can have Luke talk a little bit, and at least even if he doesn't like the lightsaber, just have him show him holding it, and people will go nuts. That's really as much as I need. I don't need anything about the bad guys. I don't need to know anything about the story. That's it.
I need to hear Snoke. I need to hear and I need to see Snoke, because we have this great controversy of, like, are we looking up at him? Are we looking at the same eye level as him? Like, we're analyzing toys now that are, like,
I was about to say that
one
toy
six,
with the big yellow, yeah, the big yellow robe.
Right. Well, the robe, we know. That's been around for, like, a year and a half. Okay. Those pictures have been floating around the internet.
You're just talking about how big he is size-wise.
The controversy coming out of Force Awakens was, is he as tall as his hologram? And
no.
If he's as tall as his hologogram, there's not going to be a fight between Luke Skywalker and General and Snoke.
No, he's
Snoke
just gonna kick him in the face.
Snoke will simply step on him and destroy him.
Is there another school of thought where he's, like, super tiny, like Yoda style? Like, playing with that?
Not really. And I think from, like, production stuff, that it seems like he's bigger than a human, but not that much bigger. So, like, maybe, like...
Maybe Grievous level.
Yeah, maybe somewhere like that, yeah.
I don't know. So that movie's completely wrapped.
Yeah. Han Solo is finishing up.
Ron Howard at the helm.
Right, and JJ is getting to work on the story for Episode 9, probably kicking Michael Arndt somewhere.
I was reading about the Han Solo movie this morning and the whole Ace Ventura thing, and so at first you're like, oh yeah, I don't want it to be like Ace Ventura for sure, but then when I think back on Han in the original trilogy, he can be pretty, like, slapsticky sometimes, like the charge where he runs around the corner with the gun and then he comes, like, running back around, like, whoa, and there's, like, 20 guys chasing him.
Right.
Yeah, I think you can do moments of that, but the whole movie like that, you're asked for trouble.
I think that, again, I just blame Kathleen Kennedy, because I'm like, talk to people, find out what the dudes like to work with, like, find out what they're like on set.
Before you hire them.
Because, like, yeah.
Kathleen Kennedy doesn't mess around, dude.
No.
She is the gatekeeper.
She is the gatekeeper.
You will bow down or be exiled.
And JJ is the key master.
Any word on the next story movie? It's going to be Obi-Wan.
It
looks like it's going to be Obi-Wan.
Looks like it's going to be Obi-Wan. I'm surprised.
McGregor?
Yes.
Okay.
And I'm surprised they did not make that announcement at Celebration.
Well, you know, they had other things to worry
about.
Yeah,
but, like...
I mean, that's a good way to deflect.
Yeah, so... All right. Well, that'll about do it for this week's podcast. Before we go, this is my weekly, and what will now be my weekly plea from here until December. I hope that The Rock and Kevin Hart are listening. Please, do not release this movie out into the public. You will lose money. You will lose respect. And most of all, you will lose cake. People will no longer want to eat cake after you make them think that it will make them explode.
Wait, so you're talking about Jumanji.
I am talking about Jumanji.
I saw that trailer, and I didn't think it looked terrible. I thought it looked all right. I thought it maybe looked kind of funny.
See, we're on the same page. But Brian is like...
Go back and look at that original 96 film. Go back and look at the portrayal that Robin Williams puts onto film.
Go back
and look at the damaged psyche of a man
original,
who has been trapped in a
and
jungle.
It's terrifying. An original Jumanji terrified
and
me.
He's been trapped in a jungle for like 30 years.
But then
he gets brought out. He finds out that his parents are dead.
Yeah.
He finds out that he completely psychologically ruined the girl that he loved.
Yeah.
He finds out that, you know, his old shoe factory is shut up because, you know... Because, you know, the
dad
the
got
town,
like, convicted of murder.
Yeah,
like,
the town thought that he murdered his own child and chopped him up and stuffed him in the hat in the house. The guy who was running the machine when the shoe got chopped up ended up having to be a cop because he couldn't work at the shoe plant anymore. Like, And on top of that, he has to get in the face and yell and scream at 8 and 9 year olds to convince them to keep playing a game while all kinds of crazy stuff is happening. And oh, by the way, there's a guy who's hunting you, literally hunting you, because he was hunting you in the jungle before. He wants to put your head on a wall.
And that look, and that was great. And the original Jumanji remains a good movie.
And that is nothing compared to Kevin Hart's weakness being cake. And if he eats cake, he blows up and makes funny sounds and squeals like a little
that.
Girl.
Is that the
yeah at the end of
now,
the trailer? Yeah.
Which person gets transformed into Kevin Hart? The hot girl, or no? The hot girl becomes
Jack Black. Yeah, the hot girl's
See,
Jack
that's
Black.
That's hilarious.
That's not and hilarious.
The hot girl's Jack Black.
That is not hilarious.
Yes, Jack Black going to be like,
but that was
what
not
are
the
these?
Point. Jumanji was not a comedy. Jumanji was an action adventure movie in 1995 that did not need to utilize songs from the 70s to get you going.
It's like Tropic Thunder.
Basically.
Now, look, but here's the deal, though. Since they are so vastly different, like, I don't even think of original Jumanji when I think of this.
And you know what? I could deal with that if they didn't come out and tell me, we're going to honor the legacy of Robin Williams.
Did they say that?
They said it.
We are going to honor the original movie, and it's a sequel, T-Bob.
Yeah.
No, they said it's a sequel.
It is a sequel.
Yeah, the beginning of the trailer. They show the actual box from the
original.
The board
game. And they just
they're playing a video game, right?
They put it up on a shelf somewhere. Because two French kids found the board game when they were walking around along the French Riviera, and they were supposed to pick it up and play it and then cause all kinds of chaos to happen in France. Instead, now this board game has been passed from people to people to people until it's made its way back to the United States of America, and some kid's like, who plays board games anymore? And it's stuffed in a closet somewhere. Well, the game, being the game, it wants to continue to get played and it wants to continue to create chaos, so it transitions itself magically into a thing that looks very similar to a Super Nintendo.
I would have liked for there to be some sort of like kid who had played and then grown up and programmed a Jumanji game to capture souls. But then it gets hilarious because Jack Black turns into the hot girl.
Does not get hilarious.
The nerd turns into the Rock.
The jock turns into Kevin Hart. It doesn't get hilarious at all.
Is there a female character in the Jumanji verse?
When you're on the Jumanji side? It was the nerdy girl that turned into
the hot girl.
See, they're flipping everything on its head.
Yes, it's a little movie trick there. Yes, I see what they're doing. It's not funny at all. It's the same thing I had with Ghostbusters, man. Don't call it, like, you're saying you don't want to call it a sequel. You got everybody there from the original playing by different characters by different names, and you're making me very angry because you have to shoot the Stay Puft Marshmallow Man in the crotch, okay? No. If you want to do something unique and different, fine. Do something unique and different. Don't call it a sequel. Don't call it Welcome to the Jungle. Don't, like, say you're going to honor the legacy of Robin Williams when you could not touch with a 55-foot pole the nuanced performance that Robin Williams gives in the original by either Kevin Hart or The Rock combined.
So they could have made this movie and not called it Jumanji.
But what about Jack Black?
No. The man who did Goosebumps cannot touch the performances of Robin Williams.
It's all about IP. Jumanji is a branded IP.
Yeah.
You can throw that on there.
It is a little depressing from that respect because it is so different that it didn't need to be a Jumanji movie.
Right.
It could have been like.
And that's the thing. There was another director who was attached with his own vision, and he was going to do it in his own way. He wasn't going to tie it to the original. He wasn't going to tie it to anything else. He was going to put a new spin on. He was looking to do Xertha, basically. You know, which is a similar concept with a different name. They fired that guy, and they hired The Rock, and The Rock hired this guy, and off
we go. The Rock hired the
probably yeah. The Rock's been doing that kind of thing.
Well, he opened up his new agency this week, so
yeah.
So it's like Ballers coming to real life. The Rock's like actually running like a talent agency now.
Yep, with his ex-wife. Yeah.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Yeah, Danny Garcia. Yeah, they were married. They got divorced, but they ain't
what
never left.
What a cordial divorce. They can still work together like that?
His whole empire, she's been there the whole time.
Damn.
Yeah.
Day one.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. So that'll about do it for this week's
episode.
So
everybody go see Jumanji.
No one go see Jumanji. And Sony will be crushed because they are releasing that movie 2 weeks after Force.
Make that movie make money just so that Brian has to deal with the resulting fallout. when it proves that you can't be that formulaic.
I told him we didn't have to go see this.
Well, this
he wants to.
This is again coming from the guy who bet $500 on Stanford to win the national championship. So
that was terrible. Right?
Second year in a row.
I told you that was
second year in a row I've done that.
That is so damn aggressive. If it's gonna be that much of a long shot, $50, maybe $100. $500. You could spread that money out, do like a bunch of crazy bets. Like,
I didn't know you did it again.
Yes, I did. So, do not go give Jumanji your $500. Don't bet $500 on Jumanji to win an Oscar.
Oh my God!
And let's make Civilization, because I cannot wait to see the disparity between the opening week numbers for Jumanji and the opening numbers for like the third week of Star Wars. It's going to be marvelous to see. to see that disparity.
Oh, I can't wait for Star Wars. You were so close.
So close, yet so far.
So close. Stranger Things Season 2 coming up too, boys.
And, Red Oaks Season 2.
A few more days.
Red Oaks Season 3 as well.
What's Red Oaks?
The Amazon TV series that I love.
Huh.
It's coming out like the week before.
I finally watched Handmaid's Tale.
Yeah.
It's good.
Awesome.
It's really good. All right, let's go.
So that'll about do it for this week's episode. You can follow us on Twitter. I'm at BCW Tiger Fan. If you want to give me betting advice, please do.
At The Mets Theory.
At TBob53.
And Marvin, you can say bye.
Bye.
And let the producers of Jumanji eat cake.
Right. It's perfect.